Okay, good afternoon. We're going to start the session today. So this workshop is organized by the Vegetable Breeding Interest Group. So during the annual meeting last year in Hawaii, we discussed potential topics of interest for the group, and the one that brought more relevance and people was more interested is in the potential use of biotechnology, meaning transgenic and also gene editing technologies, and how can we incorporate them into breeding programs. So the format of the workshop will be a 15-minute presentation. We can have a couple of questions after each presentation, and at the end we have half an hour, and we are going to open for discussion for the panelists, but everybody also is encouraged to participate in the discussion. So to start, I'm going to present Dr. Sebastian Zeug from the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in New York. And he's going to be talking about using CRISPR in tomato.
Thanks a lot, Carlos. Yes, so thanks for the introduction. Oh, yeah. Great. Oh, I'm just going to press space, I guess. I think the pointer's just enough. I'm going to press space, right? Yeah. Okay, so my name is Sebastian Zeug. I'm a postdoc in Zach Lippmann's group at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory. I'm really excited to present you some of our recent work today. So a general interest in our lab is to understand the mechanisms of quantitative variation in plants. And to do this, we study plant development using tomato as a model system. And by doing so, we are learning a lot about how plants evolved, how crops were domesticated, but we are also developing new approaches for crop improvement. So to learn how plants develop, we are studying stem cells in plants. And in plants, as you most of you know, stem cells are organized in small groups, which are called meristems, at the growing tips. And here, outlined in red, you see the primary shoot apical meristem just after transition to flowering, which will soon terminate into the first flower. Outlined in orange, so you see already the next inflorescence meristem budding off, which will then terminate into the second flower of the multiflowered inflorescence. And a repetition of this meristem termination and new meristem release will then result in a vine of tomatoes that you all know from the supermarket. Outlined in green here is a specialized vegetative meristem, which will soon grow out to produce the next shoot unit. But before all this happens, the meristem has to transition or to mature from a vegetative leaf-producing to a reproductive flower-producing state. And this process that we call meristem maturation is tightly controlled by opposing flowering signals. On one side, there's the flowering promoting florigens, and on the other side, there's the flowering repressing antiflorigens. And the balance of the two decides when and where the tomato plant, or a plant in general, this is a universal system, so when the plant produces a flower. And because of this very important function, the modifications in the florigen to antiflorigen balance was selected during domestication and breeding of many crop species. And tomato is no exception here, so in the 1920s, a spontaneous mutation was found which transformed these indeterminate growing tomatoes, so endlessly growing vines, into determinate types, which stop shoot growth with a terminal inflorescence. So these determinate types, this mutant, we call it self-pruning, or short SP, and this totally transformed tomato production, because these determinate types, they grow very compact, and they almost simultaneously flower and set fruit on all shoots. And this, at least in the processing industry, allows a once-over mechanical harvesting. So we were wondering if this single antiflorigen mutation already completely optimized tomato shoot architecture for production. And what we did is we conducted a chemical mutagenesis screen, so we mutagenized the self-pruning mutant with the goal to achieve less determinate types, so plants that grow out a few more shoot units with a few more flowers and higher yields, so to achieve something more intermediate between the two types. And here you see one of our research fields on Long Island, where we screen several thousand plants for such rare mutants, for such rare suppressor mutants of SP, or we call them SSP mutants. And indeed, we found a few, and very interestingly, all of them were caused by mutations of different components in the fluorogen activation complex. So either in the fluorogen SFT itself, or in an interacting transcription factor, SSP. But all these mutations have in common that they result in a decrease in fluorogen activity, and this now leads to a new balance between fluorogen and antifluorogen. And so this toolkit of alleles that we achieved, we can use this now to generate new hybrid combinations which grow out a few more shoot units with more inflorescences, and finally we also get higher yields. And on one of our highest yielding hybrids, which is a pretty complicated genetic combination, but where we combine heterozygosity for a weak fluorogen mutation with heterozygosity for a weak transcription factor mutation on top of this self-pruning mutation, we achieve about 50% more fruit, higher fruit yields than on the SP mutant. And we were then very pleased to see 2 years later there came a big genomic study came out which showed that heterosis or hybrid vigor in rice is primarily driven by heterozygosity for weak fluorogen mutations. So we are pretty convinced that this system that we found in tomato can be also applied to many other crop systems. So after we found out that we can fine-tune meristem maturation to optimize shoot architecture, we were wondering, can we do the same in reproductive meristems to optimize inflorescence architecture? And we had learned already in a previous study before that a delay in meristem maturation leads to overproliferation of inflorescence meristems, which you see up here. This then leads to introduction of branch points into the tomato inflorescence, more flowers, and this leads then to higher fruit yields on this wild tomato relative. So we screened a large population or a large collection of tomato cultivars. The collection, it was about 3,000 to 4,000 different accessions, and we found a few very rare mutants or natural mutants which also overproliferated inflorescence meristems, and this resulted in these highly branched floral structures. This is far away from being beneficial, so most of these flowers, they simply abort and don't produce any fruit. But we thought we can use these natural mutants to dissect the genetics of inflorescence branching. And we did this, so we found that these branched mutants, they are caused by two independent mutations in two very closely related MATSBOX transcription factor genes, one total knockout mutant and one weak splicing mutation. And interestingly, these two natural mutations, individually, they have beneficial effects on fruit and floral traits, and they were selected during domestication and breeding, and they are highly abundant in the tomato germplasm. So even if we look at the germplasm from major seed companies, we find these alleles, these natural alleles. But then when breeders try to combine both traits, what they ended often up with is these highly branched floral structures with low yields. This is due to a negative epistatic relationship between these two MATSBOX transcription factor genes. So we wanted to dissect this epistatic relationship and use CRISPR technology to create additional alleles for both of these genes and a very closely related family member. And we created a whole toolkit of alleles which allows us now to generate a whole spectrum of inflorescence architectures. And this showed us that we can fine-tune MATSBOX gene dosage to quantitatively modulate inflorescence complexity in tomato. And we wanted to exploit this system, this relationship, and generated several hybrid combinations. And in one of these hybrids, we just hit the sweet spot in Matzbox gene dosage by combining heterozygosity of a weak Matzbox mutation with homozygosity for a second Matzbox mutation. And here we just induced weak branching into the inflorescences, most of them just forked once. We got higher flower set and fruit production, and these hybrids were significantly higher yielding than the corresponding control hybrids. So what I've shown you so far is that we can use our knowledge about developmental pathways that take place in meristems to fine-tune shoot and inflorescence architecture for improved tomato productivity. But this approach has one big limitation, and this is the availability of the availability of alleles. So we are lacking allelic diversity, especially when we are talking about these weak alleles that provide a range of phenotypic effects. So these weak alleles, they are really hard to generate by conventional mutagenesis approaches. So we were wondering, how can we find more of these weak alleles, or how can we even generate them? And nature already gave us a pretty good hint for this. So when we look at evolution of many plant and animal species, weak phenotypic changes often arose from mutations in cis-regulatory regions rather than from mutations in coding sequences. So these mutations in cis-regulatory regions often just lead to subtle changes in gene expression, and this then leads to weak phenotypic effects. And we have a pretty good example for this also in tomato. So one of the major fruit size QTLs in tomato can be explained by a promoter inversion in front of the meristem gene CLAVATA3. And so this promoter inversion leads to lower CLAVATA3 expression. This leads to larger meristem and an increase in locule number. So locules are these compartments that contain the seeds. And more locules usually correlates with larger fruits. So we also CRISPRed this gene, so we mutated this by CRISPR technology, and what we saw was an even stronger effect on locule number, so more locules in the complete knockout mutant, showing us two things. First, that this CLAVATA3 promoter inversion is indeed a weak allele, so a weak phenotypic effect, and second, that we can fine-tune CLAVATA3 expression, we can probably also fine-tune tomato fruit size. And we came up with the idea to just use a whole array of CRISPR guide RNAs which are evenly distributed across the promoter region, the upstream region of CLAVATA3, to randomly induce mutations in putative cis-regulatory regions. So to create a collection of cis-regulatory alleles. And we came up with a sophisticated genetic screen to select for alleles with phenotypic effects. In the interest of time, I can't go into much detail here, but I'm happy to explain it to you, everybody, later. But what we were able to generate within less than 2 years was a whole library of cis-regulatory alleles. And so this genetic diversity also resulted in a whole spectrum, so it also resulted in phenotypic diversity. We achieved the whole spectrum from the wild-type looking 2 to 3 locule fruit to highly locule beefsteak-like tomatoes. And this is all done in the processing cultivar M82. So we are now using this technology to target additional traits with the goal to create toolkits of genes and alleles to fine-tune developmental programs that affect different productivity traits in tomato and other crops. But we are now also using CRISPR technology and the basic findings about stem cell development that we found in tomato to apply it to new systems, and we started to work on on Physalis pruinosa, which is an underutilized Solanaceae crop. It is also called crown cherry and belongs to the tomatillo clade of Solanaceae. So crown cherries are these very small 1 gram sized yellow fruits. They are very tasty, they are very nutritious, and they are enclosed in these husks. So they are very attractive on desserts, for example. We decided to generate all the genomic resources and also the transgenic tools to be able to use CRISPR in Physalis. And one of the first genes that we decided to mutate was CLAVATA1, also a meristem gene. When mutated in tomato, we did this before, we got a slight increase in fruit size. And indeed, we are able to induce mutations in Physalis using CRISPR-Cas9. And in the homozygous mutants, we find the majority of the fruits, they now produce 3 to 4 locules instead of only 2 in the wild type. And this goes hand in hand with a significant increase in fruit size or fruit mass of about 15 to 20%. So we are very excited about Physalis pruinosa or ground cherry, and we want to promote it as a new crop species essentially. And we are now building outreach with several growers in the state of New York. But most of these growers, they come back to us and tell us, This plants, they are so hard to manage. They are like wild species. We can't grow them. They just grow all over the place. They are not manageable. So what we decided next is to target the antifluorogenous P. So you remember this self-pruning gene that completely transformed tomato production, transformed these indeterminate types into these determinate bushes that are now grown as row crops in open fields. And also here, we were able to induce mutations. And resulting double SP Physalis mutants, they grow now very compact. They terminate very rapidly on all shoots, too rapidly from a productivity perspective. So they are. We didn't do the yield trials yet, but you can see already on this picture, they are probably much lower yielding. So what we are doing now, we are now using our promoter CRISPR approach to generate weak alleles for SP in Physalis to get to a more intermediate level in determinacy, get less determinate plants that are still easy to manage but high yielding. Yes, and on my last slide, I just want to sum this all up. So we can use our knowledge about developmental programs that take place in stem cells to fine-tune and optimize shoot and inflorescence architecture, two major productivity traits in tomato and many other crops. We can use CRISPR-Cas9 to mutate promoter regions and create libraries of cis-regulatory alleles that then provide quantitative trait variation. And we can now use the recent advances in genome editing technologies and also in sequencing technologies to move beyond the established crops into underutilized orphan crops and to rapidly fine-tune and optimize a whole diversity of different domestication and breeding traits. So this is the group who did most of the work. So this is the Lipman lab with Zach Lipman in the middle in our lab at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratories, close to New York City. And on my last slide, I just want to thank all the collaborators who contributed to this work and also all the funding sources. And I want to thank you for your attention.
We have time for one question.
Do you know what protein actually bind onto your cis element?
So the question is, if we know which transcription factor binds on the cis regulatory region that we mutate in front of CLAVATA3, we have no idea about the molecular mechanisms that take place there. So this is I'm always saying it's like a reverse forward genetic approach. So we are picking one promoter region, but then we are just chopping it randomly up, and we are creating a whole range in cis regulatory alleles. We don't know which transcription factors are binding. We just know that some of our alleles have a phenotypic effect. We are really screening for the phenotypes and not for the plant phenotypes and not for the molecular phenotypes. Yeah.